The question was asked, we learned the concept Tala Be'idna Sagidle. Even the fox, when it's his turn to be king, respect him. This concept is a medrash that Rashi quotes, that Yaakov bowed to Yosef. Technically, Yosef was his son, so why is Yaakov bowing to him? Because right now, he's the one in charge. So there's this idea that the one who is at the helm gets a certain amount of respect. So the question was, how far does that go? And what about the respect we owe a Jewish king? How do those two compare? So perhaps it would be easier to switch the order of the question so as to get a better picture by comparing. With the Jewish king, so the Torah says, Som tasim alecha melech, place you shall place upon you a king. From here the rabbis inferred that part of the responsibility of having a king is ours. Meaning, in the Gemara terminology is, shetehei mato alecha, have respect for him, have awe of him, have fear of him. That means, I can sit at home, as the Pasuk says in Ecclesiastes, in Kohelet, gam b'mishkavcha, even when you're in the privacy of your bedroom, melech al tekale, don't go cursing the king. People sometimes feel like I'm at home. The KGB isn't listening. I can say whatever I want. Right? When I call friends, very often, this is something, as a side note, let me just go off on a tangent for 2 minutes, because it's an important side note. We once had a student here, he should rest in peace, who discovered he was Jewish at the age of 25. And he had no, you know who he was. And he had no knowledge of it. And his mother had no proof. And one day he was off to the army at age 25 in the Midwest, in the United States. And his mother says, before you go off, on the day he's supposed to fly off, she says to him, I just want you to know the Jewish people consider you a Jew. So he says, what? Like he grew up doing all kinds of other stuff. And she goes, yeah. I'm Jewish, and my mom was Jewish, but she came from the Holocaust, and after everything that happened, she decided she's not doing this anymore. She married a non-Jew. I married a non-Jew, but technically the Jews consider you a Jew. Have a safe flight, son. And he didn't know what to do with this, and he had no way of verifying it, and he came here and he entered our gear department. So one day he walks into our office, and he says, you know, I have to undergo giur, but I think that I'm Jewish. I'm undergoing giur because I have no way of verifying or proving it, but I think I'm Jewish. So every day that I'm walking around uncircumcised is not good because I have a mitzvah. I'm not performing. So the courts are saying they'll do the circumcision when I undergo the giur. But I know that as far as I know, I'm Jewish. I don't really have to undergo the giur. I can't prove it, so I'm going to have to undergo giur. But technically, I have an obligation to do the mitzvah of a circumcision today, not when they decide to finish my process. So he asked that that we do it for him before his giur process. So we called the courts, and the court said that getting all the paperwork and everything together would take a very long time, and that they're willing to make an exception. So we got their approval, and they sent us a form, and they said, we want you to convene a court, get 3 rabbis together, and then fill out the form, and do it for the sake of giur. And we'll consider it as a giur. So we got this approval, and I brought in, one of the rabbis I brought in was the rabbi I learned Mila by, and when it came time, so we checked him, and his circumcision was medically perfect. It was just that, so all he needed was a prick to let one drop of blood for the sake of the mitzvah of circumcision, what we call hatafat dam brit. Fine, I did that, end the story, we filled out the form. It's just worth noting that half a year or a year later when he actually went to do the conversion process, so the courts called me up and said, who do you think you are? And how did you dare do this? And I said, you guys gave me the form. They said, we don't know which secretary gave you the form. You had no right to do this. And I'm getting yelled at. I said to them, you know, we got the forms from you. What do you mean? We don't know who gave it to you. There's no legitimacy to what you guys did, etc. But in the interim, this guy wanted to get married. And the courts weren't giving him a straight answer about when he would finish his giur process. And so he went and he found some Hasidish court, he discovered, and he said to them, I want to undergo conversion. So they said, fine. It's an illegal court, right? It's like a black market court. So he goes to this court, and he calls me up. It's the fast day of Tanis Esther. And he says to me, Rabbi, I have good news for you. I said, what's the good news? He says, I just underwent the circumcision. I said, what circumcision? So he says to me, well, I went to another court. You know, I want to get married. And they decided that they have to fix my circumcision. So they put me under, and they did a full circumcision. I'm all bandaged up, and they did a full circumcision. I said, which court? You're in the middle of the process with the Rabbanut. What are you doing? And anyways, I said, I inspected you, and the one who taught me, who's the biggest expert in Mila probably in the world, inspected you, and there was nothing left to cut. What did they take off? And he goes to me, I'm telling you, they looked at it, and they said, you have to cut off another large section of skin. And I decided, you say no, and they say yes, I'll be machmir. I said, let me be kosher according to all opinions. I said, you know, there are times in halacha where two opinions are legitimate. Then there are times in halacha where the second opinion is just not legitimate. I said, you know, you didn't... And I'm standing there, like, shocked to the core, wondering what they did to this guy. And I said to him, I don't know who the criminal is who touched you, but I really don't know what they did to you. And the guy goes to me, Rabbi, you're on speakerphone, and he's sitting right next to me. And he's hearing every word you said. You can discuss it with him. So that conversation taught me that when I start a conversation, I say, who else is listening to this conversation? After being on that spot where I had to talk to this person after what I said about him. So we argued it out, and I was very fortunate at that time, just to conclude the story, that two things happened. Number one, I was standing right next to Rabbi Mordechai Eliyahu's shul. And he argued with me that I didn't know what I was talking about. So I took the case to Rabbi Mordechai Leo on the spot. I said, this is what he's saying. This is what I'm saying. What's right? And he said, 100% the way you're saying, that's right. That was, so at least I had that. And the second thing I did was I said to him, ask them to give you in a specimen container the skin they cut off. I want to see it. And then what he didn't know was that we packed it in our freezer for evidence that if he would be mutilated for life, he could sue them. Meaning for until he got married and he came back and said everything was okay. For about 6 months, I had in my freezer his skin sitting in a specimen dish. He didn't know that. He was fine. Yeah, Baruch Hashem, he was fine. He healed okay. But I held on to that in case... You want a class on Mila? We could explain what they did. So I could explain it to you on a drawing. You could, if you cut off skin from parts of the body, and then whatever, I could show it to you on a drawing. At any rate, coming back to here, so the Pasuk in Ecclesiastes says, even when you think you're alone, when I start a conversation on the cell phone. So I brought this story just to say why I always ask, who's listening to the conversation? And when the person says no one, then I say, okay, so it's just me, you, and the Secret Service in Israel. Because very often they're listening. I know they were listening to my phone calls for a year or two. I don't know if they still are, but there was a period where I knew they were. So coming back to here. So it says, be careful what you say about a king. There's a certain amount of respect you have to show a king. Just because he's the king of Israel. So when it comes to the king of Israel, we have a mitzvah to respect him, som tasim alech hamelech, and that means we have to stand up when he walks into the room. That means we even have an obligation. We have to serve in his army. When there's a king of Israel, we have obligations that what he says goes. We make a blessing when we see him. There are mitzvot that stem from the respect that the Torah obligates us to give, and it's a biblical mitzvah to a Jewish king. But that's a king of Israel when he is our king here in Israel. When we speak about Tala Bidna Sagidle, That means respect your boss, basically. And if he's the big boss, so give him more respect. And if he's the king, if he's Mr. Trump and you live in the United States, if he's Mr. Obama and you live in the United States, if he's Mr. Obama and you live in Israel, there's a certain amount of respect you have to afford him, because at the end of the day, he is the one who controls the most powerful army on the planet today. He is the one that has a certain... He's at the helm. And that's not the biblical mitzvah of respecting a Jewish king. It's practical advice that Chazal gave us. Chazal said the correct way to behave is that when there's someone there at the top, you have to respect them. And that can be in the days of Napoleon, or that could be in the days of Alexander the Great, where the rabbis showed a respect for the leader. There is the opinion of the Rosh. What? They showed Haman respect, as it says in the Medrash. Mordechai said, so long as Haman doesn't wear an idol or declare himself a god, I'm willing to bow to him out of respect. The second he wears an idol on his garments or he declares himself a god, I will not bow to him. In ancient times, always it was considered a show of respect to bow towards someone. When the halacha says, don't tell someone good morning before you daven, one opinion says, that means don't bow as you say good morning. Because ordinarily people would bow with their good morning. First daven your Shemona Esrei and bow to God. Then you could bow and say good morning to someone.
If it works for Haman, it works for them.
Does it work that we show them respect? Sure, we show them respect. We always show respect to the one in position of authority. We respect them. That's the concept, yeah. You could be greater, you could be smarter, you could be more pious. At the end of the day, there's a certain amount of respect we're supposed to show, yes.